somebody was kind enough to come up to me afterwards, and I came across really strong that lies, they come from the devil, and they do. But we have three enemies. We don't only have one. It's the world, the flesh, and the devil. So if you can, we're leaning really heavily on the one. So I just wanted to make sure that you understand that the devil isn't the only one. But I'd love to spend some more time on that one, but I won't today. Gerald and Daryl are handing out evaluations. We'd appreciate if you'd fill those out as good as you can. It helps us with planning the next seminars, and we really appreciate for your input on suggestions for seminars. We take a fair bit of time looking at those and going through those, so they are important to us. So we'd appreciate if you fill those out, and there'll be a basket on the registration table where you can put them in. I'd like to begin this session with a little bit of an introduction. This introduction is what I call a basis for truth of where we want to go with in the next session. It's Psalm 139. I'm going to be reading verses 13 to 18. It comes out of the Living Bible Translation. I'm going to be reading and making some comments as we go. I could spend a lot of time on these verses, but I'm not going to. But I want you to get a hold of a few things here in this psalm. Absolutely amazing when you stop and think about the truths here. Verse 13 says, "You made all the delicate inner parts of my body and knit me together in my mother's womb." And that is you referring to God. "Thank you for making me so wonderfully complex. Your workmanship is marvelous, and how well I know it. You watched me as I was being formed in utter seclusion, as I was woven together in the dark of the womb." God had a very unique part in the creating of mankind. Wasn't Adam an amazing creation? When you think of God taking dust of the ground, forming it into a man and breathing into him the breath of life, man became a living soul. Have you ever thought about what that would be like? To me, it's absolutely amazing. This goes back a number of years when we worked at Eagle Wings. On a Thursday night, we had activity night, and one night we were in charge, and I wanted everybody to go get a hunk of mud. And I said, "We're not always very happy with how God made us. I'd like for you to make man. See how good you can do." We had a lot of fun with it. It's not that easy to make man out of dust. But God did an amazing job when you stop and think about it. But what about Eve? It's one thing about trying to make something out of mud, but what about making a human out of a bone? Now we look at the creation of Adam and Eve as absolutely amazing, and it is. How long did it take God to make Adam? How long did it take God to make Eve? We don't have accurate times or exact times of how long it took them, but we know that God made man on the sixth day, so it took him about a day, less than a day. Have you ever thought about it, that God spent a whole lot more time in the making of you than he did Adam and Eve put together. The creation of you took from the time of conception to the time of birth is approximately 9 months. God spent a lot of time, and it says here, he watched as you were being formed. Not just once in a while looking, but he watched very closely. You know, the creation of you isn't any less amazing than Adam and Eve. At conception, when life begins, you consisted of one cell. One cell. Your body is filled with many, many cells right now. You start off with one cell. One cell consists of very many atoms, and I don't even know how many. I can't remember those numbers. And one atom consists of very many laminin. I almost lose myself when I talk about this because one cell is very small. It takes very many atoms to make one cell, and then it takes very many laminin to make one atom. Laminin is something I call the fingerprint of God, and I borrow that from a speaker at the Creation Museum where she talks about the human body. Laminin is the glue that keeps you from falling apart. And laminin is in the shape of a cross. I call that the fingerprint of God. That's you. And I find that really, really amazing. Verse 16 says, "You saw me before I was born. Every day of my life was recorded in your book. Every moment was laid out before a single day had passed." What that's really saying is the whole blueprint of your life was all laid out before a single day had passed. Why is God watching so closely that you were born, before you were born, in the forming and the shaping and the making of you? That is because he wants to make sure that you fit that blueprint 100%. Your whole lifespan was all laid out before God before a single day had passed. You were one cell. One cell is about the size of the end of your pen. If you take your pen and make a dot on your paper, that's one cell. And that was you. But your whole lifespan is all laid out in front of God. And he's going to watch very closely as he shapes and forms and makes you to fit that blueprint 100%. Now, if that wouldn't be enough to think how God invests in us and is interested in us, the next two verses. "How precious are your thoughts about me, O God? They are innumerable. I can't even count them. They outnumber the grains of sand. And when I wake up in the morning, you are still with me." Now, to put this into perspective, how many grains of sand are there on the face of the earth? Well, if that's too big, let's go to a sandbox. What about all the sandboxes on the face of the earth? What about all the beaches, the sand hills, the sand dunes? They tell me the ocean floor is covered in a layer of sand. Now, if I did the math correctly here, I want you to think about this. If you live 100 years, you will have 316 billion, 224 million, 100th seconds in your life. Not 100 seconds, it's every second divided into 100 pieces. And they tell me that there are 1.8 billion, now I haven't counted them, grains of sand in 1 square foot of beach. And if you do the math there, it's approximately, this is just an approximate figure, I think it's around 158 or something like that, but approximately 150 square feet of beach that would equal the grains of sand of 100th seconds in 100 years of your life. Now there's a lot more sand than 158 square feet. Now, if you think of a person that's very, very close to you, very special to you, how many thoughts about that person can you have at a time? Only one, right? Well, in order for God, and the Bible says here that it's God doesn't just have as many thoughts of you as there are grains of sand. They outnumber the grains of sand. So in order for that to happen, He has to have very, 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 and I don't know how many varies, many thoughts of you all the time. He never sleeps. In order for His thoughts to outnumber the grains of sand, not just one thought of you all the time, but very, 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 very many. And I don't know if that's not even enough varies. So can we say that God is so excited about you, He can't stop thinking about you? Now, it's on those bases that we want to go into the next session. Practical application in renewing the mind. These were going to be two topics, but since Lester had to leave, we combined them as one. A bad belief system does not make me a bad person. One scripture verse that I'm going to be referring to, you'll see it come up a few times, but I'll be referring to it a number of times, and that is John 8:32. And ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free. And that's a very powerful verse. But when we think of that a bad belief system doesn't make me a bad person, and I want you to really get a hold of that, because some of you have marked a few lies. In fact, I went back and I sat down to the table and I started marking some too. Does that make you a bad person? No. Second Corinthians 11:3 says, "But I fear lest by any means, as a serpent beguiled Eve through his subtlety, so your minds should be corrupted from the simplicity that is in Christ." Don't let the devil do that to you. Don't let him, just as he deceived Eve by his craftiness, lead your minds astray. Satan places thoughts into your mind, then gets you to believe it's your idea. Because if we knew it was Satan that's giving us these thoughts, if we recognize that Satan's giving us these thoughts, we don't want him. But if he disguises it as your idea, you will more likely accept it. So, a bad belief system doesn't make you a bad person. It's the devil that's the bad one. I worked with a couple a number of years ago. And I distinctly remember after they went home the one night. Next day they came back and she made the comment. She said she experienced something she had never experienced before, and that is, I felt like the most worthless person on the face of the earth. She said, I don't think that way. I've never felt that way. Inside I was thinking, wow, that must be nice. I didn't tell her that. But it shocked her so badly that she says, what is going on? She said it out loud. And she said it wasn't an audible voice, but it sounded, she heard a voice, and it says, "Don't you ever go back. You're going to be sorry for what you did today." And she said she recognized it as the devil right away, and she said she rebuked the devil on the spot, and she said all those feelings left just like that. That's powerful. In this next session, I hope I can help you look at the work you did just before break, those things that you marked on those pages, how to break those. You don't have to tell anyone, show anyone. If you need help, then ask. But I want to give you some practical ways to deal with these agreements. One of the a few things that we have to keep in mind as we deal with these lies, and one of those things is we are in a spiritual warfare. Just a little, like I shared about that lady. I'm going to get you to read the verses with me again. John 8:44. "Ye are of your father the devil, and the lusts of your father ye will do. He was a murderer from the beginning, and abode not in the truth, because there is no truth in him. When he speaketh a lie, he speaketh of his own, for he is a liar and the father of it." I'm not going to say a lot on that verse. We spent some time on it before. But recognizing who the enemy is. Next one is Ephesians 6:12. "For we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of darkness of this world, against spiritual wickedness in high places." I could spend a lot of time on here, on that particular verse, regarding the structure of Satan's kingdom. And I looked at some of that in March of 2018 when we did a seminar on spiritual warfare. So I'm not going to spend a lot of time on it now. But I want you to understand that we are dealing with the works of the enemy. And he will fight against us. If he loses ground in one area, he's going to try it in another. But one of the things that I want you to look at or think about is this scripture right here, 2 Corinthians 10:4. And if you want to remember, a good way to remember this, where this scripture is, in the day and age we live in, we use two-way radios and CBs and that type of thing, and somebody sends a message to another person, they're like, 10:4. In other words, it's the way it is, I get it, I understand it, I got it. I think God had 10:4 in place long before we had CBs and two-way radios. I like that thought, 10:4. 2 Corinthians 10:4. "For the weapons of our warfare are not carnal, but mighty through God to the pulling down of strongholds." We talked about the structure of a stronghold. It doesn't matter what that stronghold is. It doesn't matter what kind of a stronghold it is. It doesn't matter how well it's built. We have what it takes to tear down those strongholds. Any strongholds. The weapons we have are not earthly. The weapons we have are not of ourselves, but they're mighty through God. Romans 8:35 to 37. "Who shall separate us from the love of Christ? Shall tribulation, or distress, or persecution, or famine, or nakedness, or peril, or sword? As it is written, for thy sake we are killed all the day long. We are accounted as sheep for the slaughter. Nay, In all these things, we are more than conquerors through him that loved us. If you notice the first word there in verse 37, it says, nay. Nay to what? Back to the first line in verse 35, who shall separate us from the love of Christ? Shall all these things? No. But instead of being separated from the love of Christ, more than conquerors. What's more than a conqueror? When you think of conquering something, that means you won. We got ahead. But it's not, when it talks about more than conquerors, it's not just so that we win, or we just so we got ahead. It's so close, but whew, we beat the devil. No. More than conquerors is the idea of we overcome with an overwhelming victory. We beat them by a long shot. If you play volleyball, and I think it's if one team has 0 and the other one has 7, or if they have 1 and they have 11, we skunk them. You know, that's our position in Christ. The enemy's defeated. I asked, or at break time, somebody was sharing with me and made a comment, something to the effect of, it's almost scary what the devil will do to you when we start giving ourselves to God and letting him take us where he wants us, and things that happen. It can be. But I want you to think about this. When you get up in the morning, and Satan takes one look at you and he says, ha, I'm going to have fun with you. I'm going to harass you. I'm going to make life difficult for you. I'm going to make life miserable for you. Or, when you get up in the morning, Satan takes one look at you and he says, oh, what are they going to do today? You see the difference? It's time the devil is scared of us instead of us being scared of him. Now, if we don't have Jesus Christ, then don't try taking the devil on, because you will not win. But with Jesus Christ, he's no match for us. We can be more than conquerors. Hebrews 2:14. For as much then as the children are partakers of flesh and blood, and he also himself likewise took part of the same, that through death he might destroy him that had the power of death, that is the devil. The devil wants to bring death to you. But the power of death is destroyed. I'm going to be looking a little later, I'm going to be looking at a chart, and I call the chart a cycle of death, and it sounds like a terrible thing to look at, but I'm hoping it can make sense to you when we look at it. But because of Jesus' death and resurrection, the devil no longer has that power over death. And that's something to be excited about. It's something to thank Jesus for. He is the only reason that we can have hope. We can have hope. There is hope. And I trust if you forget everything else today, that you can get a hold of the fact that there is hope. When people have lost hope, there's nothing to live for. But I hope that you can have hope when you leave here. back to John 8:32. And ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free. I want to look at that a little bit. Know the truth. I'm not talking about knowing the truth. And if everybody can look at me for a little bit, I have to show this. I can't explain it otherwise. I don't want you to just know the truth, but I want you to know the truth. Okay? There's a difference between knowing the truth and knowing the truth. Not just in your head, but I want you to know it in your heart. Lies and truth affect us spiritually, emotionally, and physically. One will affect us negatively, one will affect us positively. We have spiritual issues here we have to work with. Those are the agreements with the enemy. And we talked about those agreements in the last session. But there's more. There's the emotional issues. Because the emotional issues are what is connected to our pain. And physically, when you think in a particular way, it creates a groove in your brain. And so we want to address all three of these, the spiritual, emotional, and the physical. But if we think about the physical, and I'm going to be talking about this a little later again, but there's I call it a ball of mush up here that we call the brain. And if we think, like I said, if we think in a particular way, it creates a groove in that brain, in the brain. The neurons that carry the information from one part to the other, they travel like water. In other words, they will take the easiest route. So if you dump water at the top of a hill, it's going to flow down that hill, but it's going to go around the rocks and whatever's in the way. It's not just going to go straight down. And that's a little bit how the neurons travel. And so once it's created a groove or a particular way of thinking, that's going to be the easiest route to go. We looked at this chart a little bit in the last session. And the whole thing of the agreements and the thing of and how it's connected to the agreements are connected to the spiritual, how the emotional part comes into play because it's directly connected to the pain. And it's extremely important to look at pain. And I'll look at that a little bit and what happens to the brain. What happens to an individual in childhood can warp their thinking. Your brain is like a computer, gathers information from what is going on around us. But it's a computer without a keyboard. Instead, that computer is activated by our five senses. It is voice activated, sight activated, smell activated, taste activated, touch activated. Before it receives, it perceives. And when there's a wound that happens in childhood, it hinders reality. Now two types of trauma that happen to an individual, or that can happen to an individual. And those one type of trauma is bad things that should not happen to us, things like abuse and rejection and those types of things. But there's another type of trauma that happens, and that is good things that should happen to us but don't. Being nurtured, cared for, that type of thing. But as a child, they tell me that the child let me back up a little bit. As an adult, there's particular chemicals in the brain that affect your thinking and processing and that type of thing, and that are not active as a child. And so when a wound happens, it hinders reality because those chemicals aren't there to help them understand it in a adult's perspective, like we would say. And so the deeper the wound, and that creates perception then, and the perception is what's wrong with me? The deeper the wound, the greater the perception. Perception is warped. Therefore, they're not able to grasp reality. And so they aren't able to see the whole picture. They're not able to understand it. Comes to the whole thing of what's wrong with me. The child then feels as if they're defective and flawed, which is the basis of a shame-based life. So this childhood pain locks a person into perception mode instead of reality. The core emotions freeze at the sight of trauma or even perceived trauma. Everything that the individual does or happens to them is then filtered through that pain, blocking the brain from reality and his only perception. Now this creates a problem. This individual will have a number of things happening in the mind when they meet up with another person. One of the first things that will happen is, what does this person expect of me? This is all going on in the mind. I'm either responsible to make them happy, to please them, or to protect myself. Why? So they don't reject me. They're very sensitive to rejection because they've already rejected themselves. And then they start feeling responsible for that, for their original wound, and it's all their fault. So this person now meets up with another individual. The same processes will happen, but the playing out of it may look totally different because the next person is not the same as the person they just met with. Therefore, so they perceive things, and what they think this person might expect of them is different than what they think the other person might expect of them. Now, where this becomes a problem is the real person of this individual never really develops, because they have to be whomever they meet and what their expectations are, what they perceive as being expectations. So that individual doesn't even know who they are, because it was never okay to be who God created them to be. And then a person will find ways to survive. And that's what I call survival mode. And what does survival look like? People with no feeling. No feeling. Now, some of us have a hard time understanding that there's no feeling, but it's possible. I have met people with no feeling. I'm talking zero. Or another one is just avoiding people, going into isolation. Or controlling with an iron fist, abusive behavior, which can come into things like forcing submission and accusing others of not submitting, threats, abuse, domestic violence, self-abuse. It can even cause fragmenting of the mind, which is often diagnosed as DID. There's two types of DID, but I'm not going to go into that today. And there's probably many other ways that people respond. There's an example that I got out of Neo Anderson's book, Victory Over Darkness, and I thought he explained it well. There are three boys, ages 18, 13, and 9, and their father becomes an alcoholic. The father comes home drunk and belligerent every night. The oldest son, 18 years old, he's big and strong and can stand up for himself, and he says, "Dad, you lay one hand on me and you will be in big trouble." The middle son, 13 years old, not as strong yet, and he will not try to resist his dad physically. He becomes a classic enabler. He seeks to appease him. He greets dad with, "Hi, Dad. Are you feeling okay? Can I get you something?" The youngest, 9 years old, is scared stiff of dad. When dad comes home, he takes off and hides in the closet, under the bed, or wherever. He stays clear of dad and avoids any conflict. As these three boys continue in their defensive reactions to their alcoholic father, they form patterns of behavior. Now we'll jump ahead. 10, 15, 20 or more years. So we'll pick 20 years. In 20 years, they will be 38, 33, and 29. They face up with any kind of conflict or hostile behavior. The eldest, he will fight. The middle son will try his utmost to appease. The youngest will run away and disappear. And so we have adults doing these things, and we're like, why would they do that? Does that make sense? I thought it really explained what I was trying to say. The brain was not designed to live in constant pain. And dealing with pain issues is a topic for another seminar. I could spend a lot more time on dealing with pain issues. I won't. But we need to look at, want to look a little bit at how they're connected, how pain from the past and the connection to the lies. It looks like I messed up on my, some of the parts of it is covered on the overhead here. Identifying how lies are connected can be helpful, can be a helpful tool in making sense of this whole situation. This chart is a chart that I put together. It's basically to help us being able to put some of the puzzle pieces together. In the first column, there's the item of pain. The second one is pain words, putting words to our pain to describe what we feel. And then lies connected to that pain. And then what the truth is. It's just a chart or worksheet that can be helpful to be able to put some of that together. If this pain is not resolved and the agreements of the enemy are not broken, this pain can begin a deadly cycle. This is the chart I was talking about the cycle of death. We start at the top with the pain. Pain can be an unpleasant or bad things that happen to us that cause pain. Or the things, maybe the good things that didn't happen to us that cause pain. But whatever the pain is, pain leads to lies. It can be lies about ourselves, about others, or God. Lies like, "I'm stupid, I'm worthless, I'm no good." Which leads to vows. "I will never be open to anyone. I must be blamed. I must always be good." And that leads to high expectations. And there's one thing that I'd like to explain about high expectations here. It's not wrong to have expectations. But high expectations, what I'm talking about is, if you are here, but this is where you expect to be, this is where you're expected to be, this is what you should be, but you're here. So you work really, really hard and you work your get up to about here, you'll see this part you haven't reached instead of where you've came from, which where you've come from is much greater. And so you try really, really hard, you come up to about here, then this goes. So you try harder and harder and harder and harder, you get. And the high expectations, we can never reach them. The other thing that happens is, if someone is here, in order for me to be as good as they are, I have to be way up here. I have to exceed by a great distance to be as good as someone else. Or I must succeed in every attempt. When Matt was sharing his testimony, he talked about the bowling thing. I had to think of this. High expectations lead to failed expectations. Now I don't measure up. I'm not as good as others. Which leads to unfulfilled goals. I can't do anything right. I'll never amount to anything. Why try? I give up. And then there's anger. And I'm going to say many, many times, this anger is turned in. I'm a failure. I'm stupid. They tell me that a high percentage of depression is from an anger turned in. The anger then turns to self-hatred. I hate myself. I hate myself. I am stupid and no good to anyone. I'm repulsive. I am unlovable. And there's a big difference between feeling unloved and feeling like I am unlovable. So it leads to death wishes. I want to die. I wish I'd die. I wish I was never born. And that creates pain. And we go around the cycle again. And with every round of this cycle, it gets more intense and it gets stronger. And when this cycle spins out of control, it leads to suicide. In fact, that chart came to be about 2 weeks ago in session. God took us on a journey. Now, if an individual can get a hold of the concept that we're looking at today and breaking lies, vows, death wishes, those types of things, I'm a firm believer that suicide can be broken. I worked with an individual that was scared to be in her own kitchen for fear of committing suicide. And after going through the chainsaw prayer, which I'll be talking about a little later, with all of her lies, you might think this is a crazy thing to do, and I still don't know why I did it. But after we were through with all that, I asked her this question. I said, "So are you ready to go kill yourself?" And her response was this, "Well, no, that's not even an option." And I asked her this question. I said, "Why?" I said, "A couple of hours ago, you were told me you're scared to be in your own kitchen because you're going to kill yourself. Now you're saying that's not an option. Why? What changed?" There's no desire there. Now, this shows a little bit of my lack of faith, I guess, but I was shocked. I was surprised. I was like, really? Inside, I was like, is this really true? That happened on a Thursday, I believe it was. So I wanted to see kind of where they were Friday, what was happening with them on Friday, and because it was just before a holiday weekend, and they were going to go do something where they had ample opportunity to commit suicide on that holiday Monday. They came back on Tuesday morning, and they walked into my office, and I said this: "So you didn't commit suicide on the weekend?" And she's like, "Oh, you know what? I never once thought of it until you bring it up now. But yeah, I could have. There's lots of places I could have done that." Three months later, she called me. She said, "The suicidal thoughts are back." And I asked her, I said, "Tell me what's happening. Do you know what I was listening for? I was listening for lies, vows, death wishes." And I took a note of that. And after she stopped talking, I said, "Do you still have that prayer I gave you to break all the lies, death wishes and stuff?" And she says, "Yeah." I said, "I want you to make a list of all the lies, the vows, the death wishes you've made since you've left. And I want you to take them through that prayer. And if the suicidal thoughts don't leave, then I want you to call me back today." It went another, 3-6 months later. She called again. She said, "The suicidal thoughts are back." I said, "Did they leave the last time I talked to you?" She goes, "Yeah." And then she said, then I said, "Well, then you know what to do." And she goes, "Well, how often do I have to do this?" I said, "Every time you embrace lies, vows, and death wishes." When you know the truth will make you free. Not just know, but know the truth. Another incident is there was an individual that came to my office one day. He didn't come for counseling, he just came to pick something up. And I'm going to call his name Bill. That's not his real name. And Joe isn't the real name either. And he was started asking some things about his friend Joe and how he could help him. Somehow the conversation turned to suicide. Now, neither of us were aware that this guy was suicidal, but somehow we ended up there. And I shared with Bill how pain leads to suicide in a short version of today's topic. It wasn't near this long. Needless to say, he was going to stop in for 5 minutes and took over an hour. And Bill says, "Really? That is simply amazing. I had never heard it that way." Now, Bill was going to be going out for coffee with Joe that night. And later I met up with Joe. Joe was planning to commit suicide that night. After the coffee with Bill. But as he was talking to Bill, Bill shared that concept with him and how that leads to suicide and how those can be broken. And Joel told me later, he said, "That's the very thing that kept me from committing suicide that night." The power of God, how God can take a person I still marvel how that all played out, because neither one of us knew that he was struggling with suicide and how close he was to attempting it that night. How do we deal with this stuff? I'm going to come back to, I mentioned that we'll be looking at the grooves of the brain a little bit. The groove being the most natural way to think, and how childhood pain affects us and our brain and our brain function. How do we change that? I use the term, it's like cutting a new trail through the jungle. And I use the Belizean jungle for an example. We spent a number of weeks in Belize a few years ago. And on the one Saturday, we went to a zoo that only had animals native to Belize. And after that, I didn't want to walk through the jungle after dark. They have poisonous snakes and jaguars and black panthers and crocodiles. And the black panther they had at that zoo, I think would have been big enough I could have about horsebacked him. I wouldn't have wanted to try, because he was walking around inside the cage looking out. I think he was hungry. But I use that example. Now, in Belize, they still clear jungle for farmland. Even though there's all these hindrances in there that are doing all kinds of things, there's a poisonous snake called the yellow jaw. And one guy told me that they don't kill him with a machete, they shoot him. Because if you kill him with a machete, the head can still bite you. All kinds of. But they still clear jungle. It's still possible. The same way, the enemy is going to fight against you when you start working on cutting a new trail or creating a new groove. And that's one of the reasons why I wanted you to mark those things on those worksheets after the first session. Because many times we don't look at what we believe. Now, I don't know if you were shocked about what you marked or what you, because that really exposes your belief system. But I'm going to tell you, you don't have to stay there. Neither am I going to say that it's easy to change that way of thinking, but it's possible. I'm going to refer to 2 Corinthians 10:4 again, but this time we're going to read verses 4 to 6. For the weapons of our warfare are not carnal, but mighty through God to the pulling down of strongholds, casting down imaginations and every high thing that exalteth itself against the knowledge of God, and bringing into captivity every thought to the obedience of Christ. And having in a readiness to revenge all disobedience when your obedience is fulfilled. We can break down those strongholds like we mentioned earlier. The devil has an extremely strong connection with those agreements. But looking in verse 5, taking every thought captive. And I want to look at that in a little bit. What does it mean to take every thought captive? Well, I'm going to use an example here that might take all of you out of your comfort zone if you actually put yourself into this. But let's pretend for a little bit that you're training a tiger. Are tigers possibly trained? Anybody think they can't be? They can be, right? Not sure I'd be ready for the job, but I have seen places where the tiger did very well in obeying the trainer and did all kinds of things. So you're training a tiger. The tiger is in the cage, and you, the trainer, outside the cage. Or I'm guessing that's how you start. Or would you want to go in and start with? I doubt it. So when is he going to let the tiger out of the cage? Or when would you let the tiger out of the cage? Quite likely when you're convinced that tiger will obey you. Right? Now, taking every thought captive. Every thought, you put it into the cage until it obeys the master. In other words, I don't dwell on this thought unless this thought is in obedience with Jesus Christ. Taking every thought captive. Put the thought in the cage until it comes in line and obeys Christ. Romans 12, verse 2. And be not conformed to this world, but be ye transformed by the renewing of your mind, that ye may prove what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this verse again, but the Greek word for renewing, I'm not even going to try to say it because I'll probably pronounce it wrong. But the definition of that word is renovation. So when you do a renovation at your house, what do you do? You tear out the old and you put in the new, right? And that's the same way with the mind. And what it's talking about here is we're not to be like the world. How? By the way we think. We're to renovate our mind. Okay, we're not to be conformed to the world or be like the world, but be transformed by renovating our mind. It is very, very important that when we break these lies, to replace them with truth. Why? Let's look at Ephesians 6:14. Stand therefore, having your loins girt about with truth, and having on the breastplate of righteousness. When you think about the loins girt with truth, and here again, the Greek word for loins means the hip, solid, and powerful. So if somebody would be standing over here, over by the window, and they would take off in a run, and they would come running at me, and I'm suspicious they're going to hit me. What am I going to do? Right? I place my hips, I brace myself. That's truth. Now, we go on to the next one. Matthew 12:43-45. When the unclean spirit is gone out of a man, he walketh through dry places, seeking rest, and findeth none. Then he saith, I will return into my house from whence I came out. And when he is come, he findeth it empty, swept, and garnished. Then goeth he, and taketh with himself seven other spirits more wicked than himself, and they enter in and dwell there, and the last state of that man is worse than the first, even so shall it be also unto this wicked generation. What a sad state. Now the enemy really has control. But I want you to think about that: renovating, replacing the old with the new, replacing the lies with truth. You cannot live beyond what you believe. Your belief system determines your behavior. So how do I know what my belief system is? And like we mentioned, if you look at the worksheets, you'll notice that. How can this change? I want you to look at these agreements as trees. And when I'm referring to agreements, I'm referring to lies, vows, and death wishes. As this tree starts off, it starts off small and continues to grow. The roots grow deeper and deeper. The tree grows bigger and bigger. Or if you think about leaving a piece of land to itself, it is soon grown up with all kinds of things. And if nothing is done, more and more trees and brush and all kinds of stuff grows up. And you end up having a forest or a jungle mess of trees. In other words, the more we dwell on lies and make vows, death wishes, and agreements, the bigger and stronger they become. The more we embrace it, the sooner we'll become a forest of agreements. Now we have a forest of them. Those agreements are strongholds with the enemy that will have to be broken. How do we get rid of them? Well, with trees, we cut them down. We use a chainsaw to do that. Likewise, we start by cutting down these agreements. And so when we break the agreement, it's like cutting down the tree. This is what I call the chainsaw prayer. It's at the bottom. It's the bottom of the chart. We use a chainsaw to cut down the trees. And when we cut down those trees, we have the stone. But when you look at what I'm talking about by the chainsaw prayers is you want to take each one of the lies, vows, and death wishes that you've marked on your page individually through this prayer at the bottom of the page. Now, there's nothing magic about the prayer, but there's just a written out prayer to help you put words to break them. If you want to change the wording to make it more personal for yourself, by all means do that. But you want to make sure that those lies, vows, and death wishes are broken. And if you use the prayer at the bottom of the chart there, take each vow and death wish through the first part of that prayer and then finish off with the concluding prayer after all of them have been broken. And if somebody prefers to have a larger copy of it, like a full 8.5 by 11 page of with this chart on it so you can work on it, feel free to come back to the table and ask me for it, and I can make copies of it for you. So if we cut down the trees, and then we have the stumps. Now in this area of the world, we have a few trees that are called Manitoba maple and willow and poplar. And if you cut down those trees, it doesn't take real long until all of a sudden you have all kinds of branches starting to grow up again. Now, do you need a chainsaw to cut those off? No. In fact, there's a fellow that brought us some willow wood. He cuts firewood for people, and he couldn't sell his willow wood, and I have an outdoor furnace. I said, if he has scrap wood he wants to get rid of, bring it over. I'll run it through there. Now, these logs of willow were probably about that big, and they were split into three pieces. They were 3 feet long, and piled them up in a wood pile. And it was kind of in the spring of the year, so that willow wood was pretty waterlogged. But when fall came along, I had branches on those pieces of wood about this long, and they were green. So they grow pretty easily. My guess is I could have probably buried that piece of wood and had ended up having a willow tree in the yard. But the same thing happens. Those lies, we can break them. But what if they come back? What if they're there again the next day? What if they're there again in an hour or so? Well, if you notice on that chart, there's one column that says in agreement with Satan and another column that says agreement with God. And if you notice the prayer at the bottom, it says, Lord, I acknowledge and renounce the agreement I made with Satan that, whatever that agreement is with Satan, I ask you to break that agreement in the name and through the blood of Jesus Christ. I choose now to agree with God, and then you want to express the truth. There's something that happens to your brain when you verbally say it. So I actually encourage you to do this out loud. Okay? And that is something I just learned from people that actually work with brain development and that type of thing, that when you verbally say something, it concretes it in your brain, whether it's negative or positive. It concretes it into your brain. So, like those stumps, the branches grow back. We take a little snippers and we cut them off. We had a Manitoba maple at our house, and we cut it down because it was making a mess. And every year through the summer, those branches would start growing again out of the stump. And I wouldn't let them grow very far, and I'd keep cutting them off. After 3 years, the stump died. And I found that really amazing. I was like, you know what? If you cut off where it gets its life, it dies. So where do the lies get their life? You cut that part off, they'll eventually die. They won't die right away. Some of them die pretty hard. Now, what do I mean by a snipper? What's a little snipper? Carry a little pocket snips with you. This is a little 3x5 recipe card that you can buy at Dollarama for, I don't know, they're really, really cheap for a whole package of them. And what's on this little card says, I renounce the lie of the enemy that, whatever the lie is, and I choose to believe the truth that. So what you want to do is you want to break the lie and start embracing truth. Because when you cut a new trail, when you create a new groove and you quit going down the old groove and you focus on truth, that truth will become the most natural way to think. And this is just a little tool to help you do that. Now, if you want to stick it in your pocket, you have 3 seconds to dwell on the lie until you get this out of your pocket and focus on truth. But it doesn't take real long to memorize this. And you can cut those 3 seconds down to even less. So when those agreements surface, you want to break them. But the longer you let them, you dwell on them, the bigger they'll grow. Now, it can become a little frustrating and overwhelming if we have a whole list of them. And I understand that. But if there's a whole list of them, don't try to take them all on at once. Just start taking on a few at a time. If you can only handle one at a time, start with one at a time. If you can only take 2 or 3, just work on those. And if after 2 or 3 weeks or a month, you're like, man, you know what? This has kind of changed. I'm doing pretty good with these. Leave those and you grab some others. If those come back up, address them as well. I'll never forget the day that a lady in my office, and she goes, I have so many lies. Just so many lies. There's just a lot of them. I said, that's okay. I said, we'll work with them. Doesn't matter how long the list is. Yeah, but what if I have 1,000? I said, that's fine. It's okay. What if I have 1,000,000? I said, that's still fine. We'll work with that. What if I have 2,000,000? That's fine. We'll work with that. This is hopeless. I said, that's 2,000,001. We'll never get done. That's 2,000,002. And she's like, I'm still doing it. It's that easy. Well, I told you this earlier that I walked in my office one day and I did it too. If you've practiced this for 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 years, those grooves run deep. And it takes work to break those agreements and embrace the truth. But just like that tree, after 3 years of cutting off the branches where it gets its life from, these can die. Replacing those lies with truth. But we need to keep at it, or those lies will take over again. I know we spend a lot of time today looking at lies and those types of things. It's really hard not to look at pain and trauma because they're so uniquely connected to this, but we don't have enough hours to do that. So I don't want you to leave here and think, well, you know what, if I take care of all my lies and those types of things, then it'll all be taken care of. No. If there's a lot of unresolved trauma and pain inside, those lies are going to have a grounds to stay. So it's very important to identify the pain inside, how the pain affects you, find freedom from that bondage through forgiveness, and to find healing for that pain in Jesus Christ. It's only Jesus Christ that can heal that. I hope today that we were able to help you on your walk with God, give you hope in the struggle, help you understand that you're not strange or weird, but there are reasons why people struggle, along with the tools to get started on a journey towards freedom, or tools to help others to freedom, to help you grasp the power that through Jesus Christ remember the devil's agenda. He comes to steal, to kill, to destroy, and to devour you. But Jesus said in verse John 10:10, the last part of that verse, Jesus said, but I am come that ye might have life. Does it stop there? No. But that ye might have life, and that ye might have it more abundantly. What's a more abundant life? It's more than I need. Full and overflowing. And I'm going to close with a verse again, John 8:32. And ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free. So I encourage you, if you want to pray through your list before you leave, do so. When you've prayed through that list, you may do with it what Jesus would do with it, and that is get rid of it. And that's why that paper shredder is back there by the cross. Feel free to use that. It is noisy. It is actually God's paper shredder, because God brought one to me one day in an amazing way, because I couldn't afford one, or I didn't think I could. But God did it in an amazing way. It's noisy. But there's been a number of people that have said, that noise is wonderful. Because some days when I'm discouraged, I remember that noise. We do a lot of shredding in our office. And I remember that noise, and it gives me life. It gives me courage to keep on. So if you forget the lies, remember the noise. And if you shred your papers and you want copies of blank ones, feel free to ask, and we will make you some. Thank you for your attention. God bless you as you go from here, and continue on the journey with Jesus Christ, the one that gives us life, but not just life, a life that's full and overflowing, the abundant life. Thank you.